Fire! Roth snarled. He turned to his men. The muscle in his jaw twitched. Take him to the Maw, and give him to the sodomites! My lord, the messenger said, rushing into the room again, you must... He grabbed a handful of the messenger's hair. He stabbed at the man's face in a fury, wildly, again and again. He flung the man sideways and tried to cut his throat, but caught him above the ear instead. The knife turned, and a fat strip of hairy scalp came off in Roth's hand. The man wailed until Roth grabbed him again and cut his throat. Meanwhile, Neff had opened the hidden door out of the chamber. He lifted the princess's body with magic and floated it before him. Neff, what are you doing? The God King wishes to have the heads of all the royal family displayed. Whatever you're planning, I'd advise you to hurry. He didn't address Roth by his title. Everything was going wrong, and Father would be here soon. Roth turned, panting, the gory strip of hair and flesh in his fist. He trembled with rage, and the men holding Logan went as white as paste. Bring me his head when they're finished. But before you give him to the sodomites, cut his cock off, and bring me his sack for a purse. I want him to bleed to death as they fuck him. Chapter 56. The antechamber at the base of the North Tower stank overwhelmingly of blood and feces released in death. The bitter tang of urine threaded through the stench. Kylar gagged as he opened the barred door. A quick glance told the story. The men had been trapped in the room, ambushed by crossbowmen. Kylar scowled. A crossbowman? In a room this small? Then he saw the narrow platform by the ceiling, plainly visible in the shadows that now welcomed Kylar's eyes. From the way the bodies were scattered, it had just been the one man, shooting the royal guards and nobles like fish in a barrel. So this was what happened to the men who'd come to save their prince. From the streaks of blood going out the door, it looked like only one man had survived to drag himself away. Sickened, Kylar ran up the stairs. He found 6 dead Caladorans at the entryway. The rest of the story was clear enough. Caught in bed with his wife, Logan's clothes were scattered around the room. Logan had sprung up and fought. He'd killed 6 fully armed Caladorans, but from the burn marks on the floor, he'd been hurt or disabled with magic. Then, from the wide, sticky puddle of blood, it was obvious that Roth had either killed Logan slowly so that he bled copiously, or had killed both him and his wife. Neither body was in the room. The Caladorans would want Logan's body, along with the rest of the royal family's bodies, so the whole kingdom could see they were dead. The line of succession wiped out. A torn nightgown lay on the floor. The princess, young and beautiful as she was probably in a room somewhere being raped until she died of it. Kylar tried to interpret it another way. His mind analyzed the scene, trying to ward off the shock of despair. Was it possible the princess had been killed and Logan was alive? But soldiers wouldn't keep Logan alive and kill a princess whom they could rape. Logan was a warrior, a renowned swordsman, and the heir to the throne. The assassinations of the rest of the royal family had been carried out brutally, but precisely, carefully. If the Caladorans were going to make an exception and spare one life for any length of time, it wouldn't be Logan's. Grief hit Kylar like a physical blow. Logan was dead. His best friend was dead. Dead. And the blame could only be placed on Kylar. He could have stopped it. Kylar could have killed Durzo last night. Durzo's back had been there, a target he couldn't miss. Dorian had told him. Told him. What pain hadn't he inflicted on Logan? He'd allowed the murder of Logan's friend, Elaine, concealed the truth about Sierra's and Elaine's affair, got him sent to prison for murder, and forced him to break his engagement. Now, Logan had been forced to marry a girl he didn't know, and had been murdered. His wife, of less than an hour, raped and killed. Sinking to the floor, Kylar wept.
Logan, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, it's all my fault.
He reached a hand to steady himself, and found it in the puddle of blood. He looked at his bloody, bloody hand. Bloody, as it had been bloodied in this very chamber 5 years ago, when he finished his first solo kill. Bloody, as it had been bloody continually since he murdered his first innocent. This was where murder had brought him. It had brought him full circle, his murder of one innocent leading inexorably to the murder of more. In the last 5 years, he'd done exactly what he'd intended to do. He'd become more and more like Durzo Blint. He'd become a killer. He slept uneasily, so he slept light, so he was ever more dangerous. He was always on edge, and the blood that first covered his hands in this very room had never been washed clean. It had only been added to. It was no mistake that Logan's blood was on his hands now. No coincidence. The Drakes liked to talk about a divine economy, the god turning weeping into laughter, sorrow into joy. A wet boy was the merchant prince of the satanic economy. Murder begat murder, and as Durzo had said, others always paid the price.
Must others always pay for my failures? Is there no other way?
The blood on his hands said no. No. This is reality. It's hard, uncomfortable, hateful. But it's true.
I'm breaking my own rules.
A blur of shadows said. Kylar didn't look up. He didn't care if he died. But the man said no more. After a long moment, Kylar asked bitterly,
"Don't play fair. A kill is a kill."
Durzo stepped out of the shadows.
"Kylar, I have one last rule to teach you."
"And what's that, Master?"
"You're almost a wet boy now, Kylar. And now that you've learned to win almost any fight, there's one more rule. Never fight when you can't win."
"Fine," Kylar said. "You win."
Durzo stood there a long moment.
"Come, apprentice. Here is your crucible."
"Is that all your life is?"
Kylar asked, finally looking up. "Tests and challenges?"
"My life? That's all life is."
"That's not good enough," Kylar said.
"These people shouldn't be dying. Kalidor shouldn't be winning. It's not right."
"I never said it's right. My world isn't cut into black and white, right and wrong, Kylar. Yours shouldn't be either. Our world only has better and worse, shadows lighter and darker. Scenaria couldn't win against Kalidor no matter what happened tonight. This way a few nobles die rather than tens of thousands of peasants. It's better this way."
"Better? My best friend's dead and they're probably raping his wife. How can you stand by and do nothing? How can you help them?"
"Because life's empty," Durzo said.
"Bullshit! If you believed that, you'd have died a long time ago."
"I did die a long time ago. All the good passes by, and all the evil passes by, and we can't do a damn thing to change anything or anybody, Kylar, least of all ourselves. This war will come and go. There will be a victor, and people will die for nothing, but we'll be alive. Like always. At least, I will."
"It's not right."
"What do you want, justice? Justice is a fairy tale, a myth with soft fur and reassuring strength.
A myth you believed in once upon a time,
Kylar said, gesturing to the word justice etched into Retribution's blade. I used to believe a lot of things. That doesn't make them true, Durzo said.
Who's better off? Logan or us? Logan could sleep at night. I hate myself. I dream of murder and wake in cold sweat. You drink yourself oblivious and blow your money on whores.
Logan's dead, Durzo said. Maybe he'll wear a crown in the next life, but that doesn't do him much good now, does it?
Kylar looked at Durzo strangely. And you're the one who says life is empty, meaningless, that we don't take anything of value when we take a life. Look how you hold on to yours, you fucking hypocrite.
Every man worth a damn is a hypocrite.
Durzo reached into a breast pocket and pulled out a folded scrap of paper.
If you kill me, this is for you. It explains things. Consider it your inheritance. If I kill you, well, when I die, I'll take a break on my way to the lowest plane of hell and stop to talk.
Durzo tucked the paper in a breast pocket and drew a huge sword with a long red ribbon dangling from its hilt. It was a longer, heavier blade than Retribution, but with his talent, Durzo could wield it with a single hand.
Don't do this, Kylar said.
I don't want to fight you.
The wet boy closed on him.
Kylar stood still, making no move to defend himself.
Did you already give him the globe of edges? Kylar asked.
The wet boy stopped. He reached into a pouch and pulled out the silvery globe.
This? He said. This is nothing. Another fake.
He hurled the globe at the window. Glass broke as it punched through the window and sailed out into darkness.
What have you done?
Kylar asked.
By the Night Angels, Durzo said. You bonded my Kakari. You stole it from me. You still don't understand?
It was like he was speaking another language.
Bonded?
Kylar thought he'd bonded the Kakari, must have, because his talent worked now. And Durzo said it was glass?
Unbelievable, Durzo said, shaking his head. Draw your sword and fight, boy.
It's my sword now, is it? Kylar asked.
Not for long. You aren't worthy to succeed me.
Durzo raised his blade. I don't want to fight you, Kylar said, refusing to draw the blade. I won't fight you.
Durzo struck.
At the last second, Kylar drew Retribution and blocked. Talent strengthened blow met talent strengthened blow. The blades shivered from the impact.
I knew it was in you, Durzo said.
He smiled fiercely. Any delusion Kylar might have had that Durzo would take it easy on him because he hadn't had time to learn to use his talent dissolved instantly. Durzo launched into a blistering attack so fast it should have been impossible. Kylar staggered backward, blocking some blows and jumping back to avoid more. Durzo used every weapon in his arsenal. His sword blurred through combinations, whipping the hilt ribbon into a scintillant red stream. The ribbon's purpose was to pull an opponent's eye from the point of danger. Anyone who let his attention wander would find a steel reminder in his ribs. But it wasn't just the sword that confused Kylar. Durzo would follow a cut at Kylar's head with a kick at his knee, then a spinning backhand with his free hand at his face. Combinations followed and flowed into each other in a raging river of deadly motion. Blocking and dodging, Kylar retreated back and back. Durzo didn't give him time to think, but Kylar was aware of the room. It took up the entire top floor of the tower, so it formed a large circle flattened at one end for the entrance, and at the other for a closet.
The very familiarity of fighting against Durzo slowly calmed him. Of course, he'd always lost, but things would be different this time. They had to be. The surge of power flowed through his arms with a rush of tingles that made him feel like every hair on his body was standing on end. He parried a thrust, and Durzo's blade was slapped aside as if it weighed a quarter of what it did. Blint recovered in a blink, but he stopped advancing. Kylar was standing a yard from the wall with a cherrywood bureau next to him. Blint's sword flicked toward his eyes, but it was a feint. Blint's real attack was a kick at Kylar's leading knee. Kylar dropped backward toward the wall and lashed out with a foot, halting Blint's foot as it came forward. Expecting his sword to meet resistance, Blint slashed too hard. His heavy blade slashed deeply into the bureau. The stone wall slapped against Kylar's back as he stumbled and levered himself upright again. But instead of trying to drag his sword out of the bureau, Durzo reached over his shoulders and grabbed twin hook swords. Each bore a crescent-shaped blade over the knuckles, but was otherwise a normal sword with a hooked point for catching an enemy's sword. "I hate those," Kylar said.
"I know."
Kylar attacked, still trying to adjust to the talent's effect on his fighting. So far as he could tell, it could make his muscles move more quickly and more powerfully, but there was a limit to how fast even two talented fighters could fight. The talent didn't help you make decisions faster, so it wasn't a simple matter of accelerating regular fighting. Kylar had to be more careful, and he still had no idea if the talent would defend his body itself. If Blint got through Kylar's defenses with a talent-aided kick, would it crush his ribs like twigs, or were they strengthened as well? The only way to find out was no way to find out. Blint let Kylar come forward, using the hook swords defensively. Then, as they neared the bed, he started using the hooks. As Kylar struck, Durzo turned his blade down to the hook and wrenched retribution aside. He followed with an overhead slash with the other sword. Leaping backward, Kylar found himself being driven toward one of the tower's broad windows. Durzo strode in and caught a slow slash, but instead of sweeping it aside, he caught it with his other hook, trapping Kylar's blade. As Kylar lunged forward, Blint guided the blade past his head and wrenched it free. Retribution clattered on the floor behind Kylar. Blint kicked him in the chest, his foot barely slowed by the arms Kylar brought up as he drew daggers. Kylar slammed into the window and felt glass break, wood splinter, and the latch burst. He had the sickening sensation of launching into space. Clawing for something, anything, Kylar turned, twisting with the desperate grace of a falling cat. Abandoned to gravity, his daggers spun away, glittering in the moonlight. Kylar punched his fingers through a delicate window pane. His hand clamped on wood and jagged glass as his momentum swung the window open. His face met the tower wall with a crunch. Glass glided through the flesh of his fingers, then ground against bone as his hand slipped. Held. Blinking, he dangled by one hand. Blood coursed down his arm. Blood coursed down his face. He hung 200 feet over the basalt of the castle's foundation and the broad expanse of the river. Steam escaped from the single volcanic vent that opened on Voss Island and obscured a barge pulled up to the shore. The steam shone in the moonlight, and far below, by the ship, Kylar saw men talking. Even from this height, he could hear the ringing of steel and catch glimpses of Caladoran invaders overwhelming foot soldiers in the castle courtyard. Then, Sergeant Gamble emerged from the front gate. He was leading the nobles and more than 200 Cenarian soldiers. They were trying to escape the castle, just as Kylar had told them. But even as they pushed toward the east gate, the Caladorans were reinforced by more than 100 Highlanders coming from the opposite side of the castle. In seconds, the courtyard had become the front line of the battle and the war for Cenaria. The castle and the city were lost. If the nobles were slaughtered, so was all of Cenaria. If the nobles could press through the massed Highlanders and get across East King's Bridge, they could begin a resistance. It was the dimmest sort of hope, but hope had never come in the blinding bright variety in Cenaria. Something popped, and Kylar dropped 4 inches. He scrambled up the window frame as the next hinge tore out of the sill. The last hinge protested and popped out. Kylar hurled himself at the storm shutter, tied back against the tower wall. His fingers raked over slats, caught. 3 slats broke, and then finally arrested his fall. The window sailed peacefully below him, turning end over end in the whistling wind. It hit the rocks just paces short of the river, exactly where Kylar would land, if he fell. The window exploded into splinters and slivers of glass. Kylar looked up. The shutter's hinges were straining, slowly pulling out of the rock. Perfect. Durzo Blint stood in the carnage and saw none of it. Bodies were strewn about the bedchamber. Freshly cut lilies bloomed next to the royal bed, white lilies flecked red with blood. A delicate, once white nightgown lay soaking in a wide pool of crimson near his feet. The floor mosaic was scorched in a black circle, the acrid tang of witchfire smothered the hint of perfume in the air. But Durzo saw only the open window in front of him. His pockmarked face looked stricken. Wind howled through the window, sending the curtains fluttering and his gray hair into his eyes. His fingers flipped a blade, end over end in his right hand. Finger to finger to finger. Stop. Finger to finger to finger. Spin. He noticed what he was doing and jammed the dagger into a sheath. His face set, and he pulled his mottled gray and black cloak around his shoulders, covering a belt full of darts, daggers, and numerous tools and pouches. It wasn't supposed to end like this. It wasn't supposed to be so empty. He turned his back to the window, then stopped. His head cocked to the side as he heard something over the screaming wind. Kylar willed himself to release the shutter with his bloody right hand. His hand found empty sheaths for daggers that matched the empty scabbard on his back. Grunting, he contorted himself to draw a tanto from his calf. His fingers were deadened, lacerated, weak. The tanto almost slipped out of them. The ropes tying the shutter against the wall parted easily. Rusty hinges creaked loudly. Kylar stiffened, but there was no help for the noise. He took 2 quick breaths, then launched off the tower wall with both feet. He swung back toward the open window and heaved his body up with the force of his talent, as if he was swinging on a giant swing. The shutter tore away from the tower in his hands, and he barely made it high enough not to slam into the wall, instead sliding into the bedchamber along the floor. His body swept Durzo's feet out from under him, and the wet boy fell on top of Kylar, one of his hook swords going flying out the window. The shutter was between them, trapping Durzo's hands in an awkward position. Kylar slapped the shutter into Durzo's face. "I don't!" Kylar slammed the shutter into Durzo's face with all of his strength and talent. The man flew off him. Kylar rolled aside and jumped to his feet. But Blint was already up. He kicked a footstool at Kylar. Kylar blocked it with a foot, but it caught him off balance and tripped him. He landed face first on a decorative rug. Running forward like lightning, Blint raised the hook sword. Instead of trying to stand or roll aside, Kylar grabbed the rug and yanked. Durzo lurched forward faster than he expected and cut only air as his knees collided with Kylar's shoulder. He flipped over head first. Durzo's heavy curved sword was still lodged in the bureau next to the window, but retribution was closer. Kylar grabbed it and turned. "Want to—" The wet boy lunged to grab the hook sword off the ground.
"Fight you!"
Kylar jumped on the hook sword. Durzo pulled up with all the strength of his talent. For an instant, it seemed the iron core of the blade would hold. Then the sword snapped an inch from the hilt.
"You might not want to, son, but there's something in you that refuses to die," Durzo said.
He threw the broken blade aside, but didn't draw any other weapons.
"Master, don't make me fight you,"
Kylar said, pointing the blade at Durzo's throat.
"You made your choice when you disobeyed me."
"Why'd you do it?"
"I wouldn't have apprenticed you, but I thought you were something you're not. May the Night Angels forgive me."
"I don't mean me."
Kylar's hands shook on the sword.
"Why'd you make me betray my best friend?"
"Because you broke the rules. Because life's empty. Because I broke rules too." Durzo shrugged. "It catches up."
"That's not good enough."
Durzo tented his hands and pursed his lips. "Logan died screaming, you know. Pathetic." Kylar lashed out. The sword streaked for Durzo's neck, but Durzo didn't flinch. The blade slapped into his palm and stopped as if it didn't even have an edge. But Durzo's hands were still tented in front of him. The hand holding Kylar's sword was made of pure magic. It flung retribution out of Kylar's grip. Other hands bloomed in the air, striking at him. Kylar blocked and stumbled back as Durzo walked forward calmly, surging with talent. There was nothing Kylar could do. He blocked faster and faster, but the hands came faster still. Dimly, a few hands of his own talent bloomed in front of him and blocked some of the attacks, but it wasn't enough. Durzo drove him back and back. Finally, hands latched onto each of Kylar's limbs and pinned him to the wall. He couldn't move an inch.
"Ah, kid," Durzo said. "If I could have taught you to use your talent, you'd have been something really special."
Durzo drew a throwing dagger, spun it in his fingers, brought it up. He paused as if to say something, then shook his head.
"I'm sorry, Kylar."
"Don't be.
Life's empty, right?"
Durzo sighed. He was staring at retribution, gleaming blackly at Kylar's feet, as close as the moonlight, and as far away as the moon. The look on his scarred face was anguish. Regret. Following his gaze, Kylar stared at the black sword that Durzo had carried for so many years, and remembered. Scowling, Durzo had snatched the pouch away from him and turned it over. The globe of edges fell into his hand.
"Damn, just what I thought," he said,
his voice harsh in the quiet of the Jadwin hallway.
"What?"
Kylar asked. "It was a fake. Another fake Kakari." But Durzo wasn't in any mood to answer questions.
"Did the girl see your face?"
Kylar's silence was enough.
"Take care of it."
"Kylar, that's not a request. It's an order. Kill her."
"No,"
Kylar said.
"What did you say?"
Durzo asked, incredulous. Black blood was dribbling down retribution, pooling on the floor.
"I won't kill her. And I won't let you. Who is this girl that she's worth being hunted for the rest of your short—"
He stopped. She's Doll Girl.
Yes, Master. I'm sorry.
By the Night Angels, I don't want apologies, I want obedient—
Durzo held up a finger for silence. The footfalls were close now. Durzo blurred into the hall, inhumanly fast, his sword flashing silver in the low light.
His sword flashed silver?
Retribution's blade is black. There was the sound of something metallic, rolling across marble toward Kylar. He raised a hand and felt the Kakari slap into his outstretched palm.
No! No! It's mine!
Blint yelled. The Kakari pooled like black oil in an instant. What had Durzo just said? The silver was another fake. You stole my Kakari. Not a silver Kakari at all, a black Kakari. The Kakari Durzo had been carrying for years, hidden, covering the blade of retribution. The Kakari choose their own masters. For some reason, the black Kakari had chosen Kylar. Maybe had chosen him years ago, the day Durzo had beaten him for seeing Doll Girl again. That day, when a blue glow had surrounded the black blade. When Durzo had shouted, "No, not that! It's mine!" as incandescent blue fire had burned into Kylar's fingers, Durzo had thrown it away from Kylar so Kylar couldn't complete the bond. Because once Kylar completed the bond, Kylar wouldn't call the Silver Kakari for Durzo. Now they knew he hadn't called it, because it had been a fake. There had never been any Kakari in the city, except Durzo's black. And Durzo had known from that very day that if he let Kylar live, the black Kakari was lost to him forever. Durzo had even left it for him tonight, so that Kylar would have a chance. But now, it was too late. Durzo looked like there was more he wanted to say to Kylar, some way he wanted to vent his anguish. But he'd never been a man of words. Instead, mere paces away, he hurled the knife at Kylar's face. Time didn't slow. The world didn't contract to the point of the spinning knife. But despair flash-boiled in the heat of an insane hope in Kylar's heart. He didn't even notice his hand come up, didn't know how it had broken free, couldn't say how the Kakari had gone from the blade on the floor into his hand. It was just there. In that unslowed fraction of a second, black goo flipped from his fingertips and splattered across the knife, spinning toward his chest like spit against pavement. When Kylar looked again, the knife was just gone. Ting! Kylar looked down to see what had made the sound. The Kakari was rolling across the floor, coming toward him. It wobbled as it rolled, and when it climbed up his boot and dissolved into his skin, Kylar felt a rush of power. With a mental shrug, Kylar burst through the phantasmal hands holding him to the wall. Settling smoothly on his feet, he extended a hand toward his old master and released the power arcing through him. Durzo was hurled away as if all the force of a hurricane had been unleashed in his face. He tumbled end over end, sliding and rolling across the room until he slapped against the wall. With the talent, Kylar caught up retribution and brought it to his hand.
"Don't fight when you can't win," Kylar said.
"And don't fight when you don't want to win. Right?"
Durzo struggled to his feet and stood, weaponless. He took a ready position and smirked.
"Sometimes you have to fight."
"Not this time," Kylar said.
He raised the sword and came forward at a run. Durzo didn't move. He just looked Kylar in the eye. Ready. At the last second, Kylar dodged to the side and dove through the window
into the moonlit air whipping the North Tower. One of those men on the boat had been Roth.
Chapter 57. Logan had no intention of letting anyone use his sack for a coin purse, much less Roth or Sewell. In fact, he intended to kill the bastard. He wasn't worried that he was unarmed and still naked. Roth had supposed it would strip him of his dignity. Rage gave him power. All the cruelty and depravity and horror Logan had seen in the last day had transformed him. He would be a man again later. Now he was hard, crystal clear, frozen rage. Logan figured that even with his hands bound, he could kill both guards. With the fury that was arcing through his body, he didn't think there was much of anything that could stop him. Except magic. Roth had known it, too, and he'd sent his witch, Neff Dada, to escort Logan to the dungeon. Neff had obviously memorized the layout of the castle, because he threaded through servants' hallways and back staircases and cellars effortlessly. The city of Cenaria had only one jail, connected to the castle by a single tunnel, now overrun with Caladoran Highlanders, and separated from the rest of the city by two forks of the Plith River. Prisoners were taken to the jail by barge. Few left. The felons who came here might as well have been devoured by the earth herself. Or, the sliver of Logan that wasn't rage thought, as a peculiar smell assaulted his senses, maybe it was called the Maw for different reasons. Fumes were constantly escaping from the north side of Voss Island and filling the air of the prison with the smell of brimstone before finally finding the open air. Neff Dada paused before an iron gate, while one of the men guarding Logan fumbled for a key. Neff glared at the man and waved a hand in front of the lock, the tendrils of black on his arm, not quite moving in time with his arm. The lock clinched. The guard produced the correct key and smiled weakly. "I've other matters to attend to," Neff said. "Can you handle him by yourselves from here?" "Yes, sir," the guard said, looking at Logan nervously. Logan's heart smiled. Fighting two-armed men while naked wasn't exactly good odds, but with Neff's magical bonds holding his arms motionless and giving his legs barely enough space to shuffle, there was nothing he could do. "Good. The bonds will hold for 10 minutes, Neff said.
"Plenty of time, sir," the guard said.
With a snort, Neff left them. The big-nosed guard locked the iron gate, giving Logan time to adjust to the dim room. To the right and left were heavy doors with iron-barred windows.
"In case you're wondering," Nose said, "these are the nicest suites in the place. Real sweet places, for nobles, not for you, though." He chuckled.
Logan looked at the man flatly.
"Ramp up there goes to the surface. Not for you either."
The weasel-faced guard looked at Nose.
"You always taunt dead men?" "Always," Nose said, stuffing a finger up his nose. "What?" he said as Weasel looked at him. "I was scratching."
"Shut up," Weasel said.
"We down on three?"
"Yep, all the way to the Howlers. Let's make it quick."
Nose tapped on the fourth door as he passed it.
"I'll be right back for you, sweetheart."
There was a little cry from the cell, but the woman inside didn't look up.
"That bitch makes me hot," Nose said. "You seen her?"
Weasel shook his head, so Nose continued.
"Got more scars on her face than a Highlander's got fleas, but who needs to look at her face, huh?"
"The prince will rip your throat out if you touch her," Weasel said.
"Ah, how's he gonna know?"
"He's coming down tonight. Wants to free our Sakage boys and check on that wench and some little kid they dragged in," Weasel said.
"Tonight? Hell, she won't take me 5 minutes," Nose said.
He laughed. They wound their way through two levels of man-made tunnels, the smells of massed humanity thickening and mingling with potent brimstone, sewage, and other smells Logan couldn't identify. He tested his bonds periodically, but there was no change. He was barely mobile. Nonetheless, he kept his eyes open for his chance. Simple escape wouldn't be good enough. He had to kill both guards, get the keys, and remember the way out. The howlers were on the third floor, but as they came into the natural caves, merely widened with tools, Logan heard no howling.
"We don't want to go no further," Nose said,
pausing in front of a double-banded iron door.
"These bastards here will do all we need. I'm not going to even try to get him out of the hole. I don't go near those animals."
"The hole?" Logan asked. Nose leered, but seemed eager to terrify him.
"Hell's asshole. For the rapists, killers, and twists so bad that hangin's too good for 'em. They drop 'em in there and let 'em devour each other. They have to get their water off the rocks, and the guards never throw in enough bread. Sometimes they piss on it first."
"So, who's going to, you know?" Weasel asked, drawing his blade awkwardly.
"Those bonds won't hold forever."
"Who's going to what?"
Nose asked.
"You know, cut 'em off."
Logan tested his bonds, but they were still strong. His arms were locked at his sides, his torso held ramrod straight, and his feet could only move a few inches at a time, and the guards knew it.
Oh, God. He was running out of time.
"I'll do it,"
Nose said with a snarl. He grabbed a catchpole and draped the noose over Logan's neck. Then handed the pole to Weasel.
"You hold him. We can't take any chances. Gimme that."
Weasel handed his knife to Nose. It was just an ordinary knife, but Logan's eyes fixed on it. Fear began to mix with rage, and he felt that ice thawing, melting.
"They're going to do it. Gods, no."
He thrashed his arms and legs like an animal, but no matter how he shook or twisted or turned, he barely moved an inch. Nose laughed, and Weasel just tightened the rope on his throat until Logan was turning purple. He didn't care. "Let them kill me now. Oh, gods." Nose said,
"It's too bad you haven't worked with me longer."
"Why's that?"
Weasel asked, nervously holding the catchpole with both hands. Nose rammed the knife into Weasel's eye. The man stood up on his tiptoes and twitched violently, then fell.
"Because I would have tried to cut you in instead of cutting you off," Nose said.
He laughed to himself and cut the noose off Logan's neck. Logan stared at it, stunned to silence, his rage and fear slow to fade. Nose didn't pay him any attention.
"When you can move, put these on. Sorry they didn't send someone more your size,"
Nose said, stripping the clothes off Weasel's corpse.
"Who the hell are you?"
Logan asked.
"Doesn't matter," Nose said, throwing Weasel's breeches at Logan. "What matters is who I work for."
He lowered his voice so the prisoners wouldn't overhear him.
"I work for Jarl, a friend of a friend of yours."
"Who?"
"Jarl said to say he's the friend of a friend."
Nose cut away Weasel's underclothes with the knife.
"I'm just telling you what I was told to—"
"What the hell are you doing?"
Logan interrupted.
"Cutting his sack off."
"Oh, shit."
Logan shut his eyes and would have turned away if the magical bonds had allowed it. Nose ignored him and cut.
"Damn. Well, it ain't pretty, but it'll do. Good for us his hair's the same color as yours, eh?"
He stood and shook a piece of flesh at Logan.
"Look, pretty boy, this wasn't my idea. But if Roth finds this sack after you and I are conveniently killed during the uprising,
We might both stay alive. Understand?
No.
Too bad. We don't have time. That shite I was talking about on our way down here was true. There's a woman and a little girl up in the first set of cells. Jarl wants us to get him out. He wants to know why Roth wants him. Looks like those bonds are weakening. Grab a leg.
Logan found he could move his arms if he pushed hard enough, and his feet were almost loose. He grabbed one of Weasel's feet, avoiding looking at his crotch, and started dragging him with Nose.
"So you said all that just so I'd know it?"
Logan asked. Nose scowled at the long iron bars set over a dark gap in the floor. The hole was deep enough that in the meager torchlight, Logan couldn't see the bottom of it. Nose grabbed a key and unlocked a small grate at the near side of the bars. Snuffling noises and grunts that Logan would barely call human drifted up from the hole.
"And to see if he knew anything I didn't before I killed him," Nose said. "Help me dump him in. Don't worry, it's plenty deep and the sides are sheer."
Logan moved forward reluctantly to help. He still couldn't move enough to squat to grab the grate, so Nose dragged it open, and Logan shoved Weasel into the hole. Demonic cries of glee pierced the air, and a fight promptly broke out below. Shivering, Logan stepped away from the hole. "What's the plan now?"
"The plan?"
Nose looked down into the darkness and shook his head.
"We get the hell out. If Roth wins tonight, he'll be hot to find you. Jarl will have several men report seeing your body. Someone else will have seen me dead and will finally admit to having looted my body. He'll show your coin purse to Roth."
"That's pretty thin," Logan said. "Will you shut that damn grate?"
"There's hundreds of men dying upstairs. Trying to find out what happened to any one of them will be impossible. Roth knows that. Anyway, it's the best we can do and keep your head on your shoulders at the same time. Jarl will have to decide if the coin purse bit is too much."
Nose stared back into the hole where the unmistakable sounds of feeding could be heard. He turned to Logan and smirked.
"Kinda makes you wonder, don't it?"
Logan shook his head, sickened. He looked back at Nose in time to see a thin lasso sail out of the hole. It dropped neatly over Nose's shoulders. In a blink, Logan saw that the rope was braided of sinews, and he had an insane thought. What animal down here is big enough that they could make a rope of its sinews? Nose's eyes filled with terror. Then the lasso jerked tight and yanked him off his feet. He smacked full length across the open grate and spread his arms and legs to keep from falling in. But raising his arms brought the noose off his shoulders and around his neck. A wild cackle sounded from the hole. Logan staggered forward, moving faster than he had for half an hour. But he was too slow. Nose's eyes bulged as pressure mounted on the rope around his neck. There must have been 5 men pulling it. His arms weakened as he blinked at Logan, eyes bulging grotesquely. Then his arms folded, and he slid into the hole. Logan tried to grab for the man. Instead, he stumbled, tripped against the last vestiges of his bonds, and found himself rolling toward the hole himself. He gripped the bars and found himself staring down. He could vaguely make out the forms of men in a knot, limbs rising and falling, screeching and tearing at each other, and Nose, who was flailing and screaming. For a full minute, Logan was stuck there, unable to move his arms and legs far enough to push himself away. Nose gradually stopped shrieking, and the dark forms retreated from each other to feed. Then one of the men saw Logan and shouted. Logan flung himself to the side as hard as he could. He felt the weakened magic strain and snap. He flopped on his back on the jagged stones, then sat
and flipped the grate closed. The key had fallen out of Nose's hand when the rope had jerked him from his feet, but Logan was shaking too badly to lock the grate. Unsteadily, he got to his feet and walked up the hall. Logan pulled on Weasel's clothes, stretching them over his taller, more muscular body. He was lucky that the man's clothing had been baggy, or it wouldn't have fit him at all. After pulling on boots that pinched his feet terribly, Logan stood. He tried to find the strength to go back and lock the grate. If he never saw a prison again, he knew he would still have nightmares of this day for the rest of his life. The last thing he wanted was to go back down the long hallway to the hole. But he couldn't let animals like that have even the slimmest chance of escape. He walked down the long hall, carefully, slowly, even though he knew he should hurry. Several paces from the grate, he stopped. It was undisturbed, but he could still hear the sounds of men tearing meat. He wanted to vomit. The sound of approaching voices came to Logan from above. The long rock halls carried their words. "Hey, you!" a voice with a Caladoran accent demanded. One of the men in the last set of cells before the hole answered, but Logan couldn't distinguish his words.
"Did a couple of soldiers and a prisoner come this way?"
Logan froze as the prisoner murmured something.
"See?" the voice said. "They didn't come this way. And believe me, you don't want to go down to the hole."
Logan blessed the prisoner, who'd lied, probably more out of the habit of lying to authorities, than to save him.
"And you think a prisoner is going to tell you the truth?"
a man with a cultured Caladoran accent asked.
"The prince demanded confirmation that Logan Gyre is dead. All your men are cooperating and searching the rest of this dungeon. Are you trying to hinder us?"
"No, sir."
An unnatural, unflickering red light illuminated the long hallway.
"A witch! Oh, shit! Where can I go?"
In the feeble torchlight, Logan examined the hallway again, but there were no niches, no crawl spaces. It was a dead end.
"Have I been spared from death so many times just for this?"
Logan considered a mad rush at the men. With only a knife, it would be tight, but if he could kill the witch first, he might have a chance.
"This is a place of power. I feel dizzy with it," a different voice said.
"Indeed,"
the first witch answered.
"I have not felt so much evil in one space since... well, since I last met with our liege."
For some reason, they found that humorous. Logan's heart broke as he heard at least six men laughing. Six men. Maybe five witches. At least two. Even if it were two witches and four soldiers, Logan was lost, and the red light was growing brighter. They were only steps away. With dread, Logan looked down at the grate. It was the only way. Count Drake had told him that life was precious, that suicide was a coward's way out, a sin against the god by flinging his gift back in his holy face. What was it Kylar had told him once? They had been propositioned by black market prostitutes, girls who operated outside of the Sakage control and protection. The girls, neither more than 12, had offered themselves specifically for degrading practices Logan hadn't even heard of. Kylar had just said,
"You'd be surprised at what you'd do to stay alive. You'd be surprised at what you'd do to stay alive."
Logan opened the grate and slipped inside. He hung on the iron bars by one hand while he locked it. Then he tucked the key back into a pocket, drew his knife, and dropped into hell.
Chapter 58. It wasn't until Kylar was flying through the air that he realized just exactly how far down it was to the river.
He had no excuse, really. He'd been dangling out of this very window, looking at this very view not 5 minutes ago. Except now, the view was enlarging. Rapidly. He was going to clear the rocks. That was good. He was also going to hit the river at incredible speed, face first. Maybe a trained diver could have taken such a plunge without harm, but Kylar wasn't a diver. The river filled all his vision, and he flung his hands out, a thin wedge of talent wrapped around him. Then he plunged into the river. His outstretched hands did nothing, but the wedge of talent protected him and drove him under the river's skin like a splinter. The wedge collapsed an instant after he hit, and the water slapped him as brutally as if a giant had clapped his hands together over the whole of Kylar's body. He was dreaming again, if it was called a dream when... When what? The thought dribbled through Kylar's fingers and he lost it. It was the dream he dreamt whenever he'd seen death for the last 10 years. Like always, for a brief moment, he knew it was a dream. He knew it was a dream, but by the time he realized what dream it was, he couldn't pull away. It swelled around him, and he was 11 again. The boat repair shop is dark, abandoned, cold in the silver moonlight. Azoth is terrified beyond terror, even though he planned this. Now he turns, and Rat is behind him, naked. Azoth edges toward the hole where boats once were lifted from the filthy waters of the Plith, edges toward rope, and the rock tied to it, and the noose he knotted on the end.
"Kiss me again,"
Rat says, and he's right in front of Azoth, hands grabbing at him lustfully.
"Kiss me again."
Where's the noose? He'd put it here, hadn't he? He sees the rock that was supposed to drag Rat to a watery death, but where's the... Rat pulls him close, and his breath is hot on Azoth's face, and his hands are pulling at Azoth's clothes. Kylar hit the bottom of the river with a bump. His eyes flicked open, and he saw retribution inches away from his face. In the shock of hitting the water, it had been torn from his grasp. He was lucky he hadn't cut himself to pieces with it. He was lucky that the silver blade had plunged straight to the bottom with him. Suddenly, aware of the burning in his lungs, Kylar grabbed retribution and pulled for the surface. "How long have I been down here?" It couldn't have been more than a moment, or he would have drifted away and drowned. Seconds later, Kylar was surprised to find himself breathing air again, and uninjured, at least from the fall. His nose and fingers were still bleeding, though, briefly staining the waters around him. The current jostled him up against a rock, and he pulled himself up. He'd washed up on the rocks on the Voss Island side, under East Kingsbridge, directly across the river from the Jadwin estate. The bank of the river where he stood was also the foundation of the castle wall, so to get upstream, he had to half-climb and half-swim. It took him 10 exhausting minutes to get to a point where he could climb out of the water again. The docks where he'd seen Roth were at the northern tip of the island. To get there, he'd have to either continue through the water and the boulders along the river, or he'd have to go through the squat, stinking building that covered the Voss Island crack. Kylar didn't think he could make it over the rocks for another 10 or 20 minutes. Even if Roth were still there when he arrived, Kylar was too weak to go that way. His nose had finally stopped bleeding, and he'd wrapped his hand so it wasn't bleeding too badly. But if he tried to swim, it would bleed again. His hand throbbed, and his whole body felt weak from the blood he'd lost. If it were any other night, Kylar would have left. He was in no shape to attempt an assassination. But logic didn't mean much. Not tonight. Not after what Roth had done. The building on the Voss Island crack
was built of stone in a square, 30 paces on a side, and only a single story.